Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the fastest growing and the most important segment of society, to those of you who know, as I do and as our guest this morning does, that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. It's my pleasure to welcome IQ Al-Rasuli. He is the author of Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam, to the program, as we do every Friday. How are you, IQ?
I'm fine. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I actually had a fairly emotional week this week because someone sent me an article published in the Daily Mail that detailed what happened in the first 3 days after the kidnapping of those almost 275 young girls from their school in Nigeria. Did you happen to catch any of that article in the Daily Mail?
I just had a look at it a few minutes ago.
Yeah, it's what it reveals is several things that I thought were troubling, and I wanted just to get your impact or insight on it. Let me give you the three things that I found to be the most troubling. First, the Boko Haram drove the girls 1 hour north, and they camped out in a village just 1 hour's drive north of where they kidnapped the girls and burnt the school for 3 days. How do you suspect it's possible that with all of their trucks and all of the people, all of the militants, all of the girls, they could be an hour's drive north of the site that they captured the girls and stay there for 3 days and no one found them?
Impossible. Logically, impossible. I was thinking the same, no, not the same as you did. I was thinking, how is it possible to have 300 girls mm-hmm. without a lot of trucks?
Right.
I mean, even if you put 20 of them per truck or 25 of them per truck, you need 10 trucks.
Right. And how can the 10 trucks and also all of the militants, because you're going to have at least 4 or 5 militants per truck, because you've got to have one driving, one riding shotgun, and you've got to have at least 2 in the back of the trucks keeping the girls from escaping. On top of that, how is it possible to have 10, 12 trucks, this many armed militants, and you travel from the worst kidnapping in modern history, and you travel 1 hour north, and you stay there for 3 days, and no one finds you?
I have no idea. Honestly, I have no idea. I mean,
I have no idea. Yeah, when I run into things, IQ, that I can't understand, that just make absolutely no sense to me, I am, as you probably know, I'm relentless, like a dog with a bone. I've got to come up with an answer. And the only answer I could come up with is this one. And it's not a pretty answer. No one wanted to find them.
You mean collusion?
No one wanted to find them.
That's why I said collusion.
Yes. And the reason no one wanted to find them is the same reason that when the U.S. went to get bin Laden, they had no interest in capturing him. They had no interest in trying him. They had no interest in holding him accountable. They just wanted to kill him. Dead men tell no tales.
If it was true. I still don't believe they ever killed bin Laden in that place.
Okay.
I don't believe in conspiracy theories. I'm not even making a conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe he was the man that they killed in there. I think he was dead a long time ago.
By the way, I wouldn't ever press an argument with you on that case. But be that as it may, the only reason I could come to that the world, which, you know, went to such great extents to find the airplane with a similar number of people on it that disappeared, didn't bother to find these girls and rescue them 1 hour north where they stayed there for 3 days, is because no one wanted to find them. Because if they find them and they hold the kidnappers accountable, then the world's going to know the single most devastating lie being perpetrated today, which is that the terrorists are somehow related to Al-Qaeda and not to Islam, and that those who act badly have corrupted their religion and are extremists and are radicals and not fundamentalists. Because if they were held accountable, if they were brought to trial, if the girls were to recount what they did to them, the whole world would have to confront the truth, which is that Islam is a religion that endorses kidnap, rape, torture, and mass murder.
By the way, Abu Bakr was saying that in public. He said, Allah permits me to do so, and he quoted the verses from the Quran. I mean, it's not as if it's a hidden agenda. He said it in public.
Correct.
The two young men from also Nigeria who murdered the white British soldier were quoting verbatim verses from the Quran, and the judge says, no, no, this is not the way it is. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Denial. That's what they are, denial.
Yeah. Yes. So, you know, the Daily Mail article was only published in that one periodical. I think it is the most compelling human interest story of the decade.
And nobody caught on to it.
Right. And let me tell you why I think it's the most compelling human rights story of the interest story of the decade. Is that in Syria, you can kill and rape 1,000 people over the course of 2 or 3 days. And because all of the killing is nameless, because there is no one chronicling it, there's no one telling us what happened, it's just lost in the sea of death and destruction. Here are, in the first 3 days, 6 girls, 2 of which were raped and left to die, tied to a tree, and 4 who were assassinated because they didn't cooperate with their kidnappers, and they were assassinated to get the rest of the girls to go along. And that story of what those girls endured and how they were found and how the other 4 were murdered in front of that village is the ultimate human rights story. It is the window into Islam, because in this case, Abu Bakr of Boko Haram has no affinity whatsoever with Al-Qaeda. And he is not only a fundamentalist.
You're right. You're absolutely right. They have no relationship with Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is a figment of imagination of the West.
Correct.
Al-Qaeda
Correct.
Existed only in Afghanistan under Osama bin Laden. But vanished after that. Every Muslim is Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, actually it existed under the Taliban. Under the influence of bin Laden, but it really was an offshoot of the Taliban, and it was used by the United States to fight a proxy war against the Soviet-backed government of Afghanistan. Is how it came to exist there. We built it, we created it, we funded it, we armed it, and we deployed it to fight a proxy war against the Soviet-backed government of Afghanistan, to give them a taste of what they gave us in Vietnam. But be that as it may, your statement is the statement that I make all the time, that Al-Qaeda is a figment of the West. It's as mythical as fighting a war against a tactic. You know, to have a war against terrorism is impossible, because terrorism is a tactic. Al-Qaeda has been created as an imaginary enemy because no one wants to admit the truth, which is that the war is against Islam. And this Boko Haram incident, this human rights tragedy with these 2 girls being raped and left to die tethered to trees, and the 4 girls being murdered in front of the others to get the others to go along in the first 3 nights, is the most vivid, the most anguishing human rights story, I think, that has appeared in over a decade.
I agree. And nobody sent a single aeroplane
right.
of any kind
right.
to look for them.
Right. You know, we're
not in 100,000 square miles of ocean.
Yeah,
they were
in
a few hundred square miles in Nigeria.
They were 1 hour drive, or a 1 hour drive. I mean, these are trucks on paved roads. A truck on an unpaved road filled with girls like this could probably drive at about 20 miles an hour. They were 20 miles north of where they kidnapped these girls, and they stayed there for 3 days. You know, the United States, I'm not a big fan of our military because I think it's used counterproductively. But if the United States is willing, and we do, to, and we have recently, to fly special operations missions into to get bad guys and to do our bidding, why would you not, in this case, deploy our special forces to go and rescue these girls?
I'll tell you why. Because Obama sent 60 to Chad.
Right.
Not Nigeria, to, right. to Chad. What will they do in Chad?
Nothing.
That's the question. That's exactly what you said. It is organized criminal negligence.
It is. You know, listen, you and I don't have the wherewithal to go into Nigeria and rescue these girls. But, you know, the government of the UK does. The government of France that sent troops into Mali, they do. The United States most certainly does. Every Islamic nation does. Why is it that no one was willing to go and rescue these girls before they were raped and tortured and murdered?
But even now, days later, nothing has been done.
Oh, days later.
It's impossible. It really is impossible with modern technology. And
right.
I've seen many, many
right.
programs.
Correct.
At night, those people,
correct.
In the middle of the night, their body heat will show.
Of course.
Their body heat will show.
If the moment those girls were kidnapped and those buildings were burned, it was possible for the U.S. and most advanced nations in the world to track through infrared technology the movement of those trucks, the movement of those girls. It would have been extremely easy to locate them, extremely easy by modern standards to rescue them. And the fact is now it's gone 50 days, and they're still not rescued. The only explanation for that is the world doesn't want to rescue them. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with IQ Al-Rasuli. IQ, I really am interested in this particular perspective. Can you think of any other explanation than the West doesn't want to confront, have people confront the reality that Islam is savage, that it rapes little girls and leaves them to die, that little girls that fight against being kidnapped are shot in front of the other little girls to terrorize them, and that the village that they were in for 3 days, no one would even walk out of their home because they were so afraid of Muslims, that depiction of Islam from a person who routinely cites the Quran, Abu Bakr, the head of Boko Haram. That's an image that the world doesn't want people to know.
With all due respect, you use the word world. It's not the world. It is our leaders in the West.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the world. It's our leaders in the West. The same leaders who cannot or are not willing, especially Obama, to associate the word terrorism with Islam.
Correct.
How is he going to solve the problem of terrorism if he cannot, and the intelligence services cannot, and the military of the America cannot associate terrorism with Islam? How is he going to solve the problem?
Yeah. And by the way, in America, if you are in a government position, either as a federal agent, FBI, CIA, or as a intelligence officer, NSA, military intelligence, CIA, or you are in a position of a political appointee, if you associate Islam and terrorism together, you're fired.
Yes, I know.
And
I know this is Obama.
Don't be so quick. He has certainly advanced it. It was created by George W. Bush. George W. Bush is the person who actually made that assessment and had every government training and protocol manual rewritten to expressly disassociate Islam from terrorism. What percentage of today's terrorist events? What percentage of today's terrorist events? I'll answer that question in a moment. What percentage of today's terrorist events are perpetrated by fundamentalist Muslims?
100%. Not 99.99. 100%.
Yeah, I'm gonna actually use the 99.99 just because of the fact that occasionally, like for example, last week. A couple of girls were hanged in a Hindu community. There's some still occasionally some non-Islamic terrorist attacks, but in general, it's somewhere around between 99.9 and 100%. But I think it's closer to 99.9. So if you were to disassociate fundamentalist Islam from terrorists, you'd be disassociating yourself from the only reasonable connection.
No, because I'll be dissociating myself from reality.
That's correct. That is correct.
Which is a negative item, totally negative item, not acceptable.
Yes. The reason that he did this is because he wants to be loved by Muslims. By an Islamic definition, he is a Muslim because his father was a Muslim. He was educated as a Muslim. He wants to present Islam as a glorious religion. And he knows that in the West, to associate Islam with the truth, to show that Islam motivates men to be rapists, to be kidnappers, to be slave traders, to be mass murderers, and to be terrorists, would tarnish the image of the religion he loves.
I agree. I always say he was a Muslim. I never changed my mind. I said it before he was elected. I proved it before he was elected.
By the Islamic definition, he is a Muslim. The other thing that I would like to get your take on is that article. It says specifically that when the young boy who is telling, whose eyes we are witnessing what occurred, was actually kidnapped by Boko Haram. He was kidnapped and held by Boko Haram for 2 years, Baka. And he finally left them while they were trying to shoot and kill him because they ordered him to kill his father and he wouldn't do it. He's the individual that we're hearing this this horrible story from. He said that when he went to the village 1 hour north of where the girls were kidnapped, he couldn't get a single person to come out of their home and talk to them. Not one person. This was now 2 weeks later. But 2 weeks later, not a single person. How is it that a religion can terrorize people to that extent? How evil, how vicious do the religion have to be to scare people to the point they won't even walk out of their homes? Gathering this, we're having a conversation with IQ Al-Rasuli. IQ, we ended the last segment talking about the paralysis of action that occurred in the village where these little girls were raped and murdered over the course of three successive days with no one acting. That screams out to me that this is really what's happening the world over. There's a consequence when people are paralyzed, when they're terrorized, when they're afraid to act. What happens when people don't act?
Evil wins every time.
Yeah.
You ask the question rhetorically, why were they? They were scared exactly the same thing that happened to the pagan Arabs under Muhammad 1400 years ago. He terrorized them into submission.
Yes.
They didn't want to convert to his pathological and psychopathic religion.
No.
They knew it was psychopathic. They knew he was a charlatan. But he forced them through terror. That's why in the hadith it says, I was made victorious with terror.
Correct.
That's what his followers are doing now.
Yeah, yes. It's Machiavellian. It's the idea that you can prevail by manipulating people through fear. And that when that happens and when no one is willing to stand up, evil prevails. It's why Islam continues to grow and to menace and to be responsible for 99% of the world's terrorist act. There are perhaps a dozen people in the world like you and I who are willing to take the risk of exposing and condemning the religion. But what is 12 people in a world of 7 billion?
Zero, practically.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, Hitler did exactly the same thing, and Hitler learned
sure
from Muhammad.
Right, absolutely. Mein Kampf praises Islam. Absolutely.
He looked to Islam. He preferred Islam over Christianity.
Of course he did. Yeah. Yeah, he spoke very favorably
Islam
of Islam and Mein Kampf.
Of his character also.
Correct. Yeah, the Roman Catholic Church did the same thing for many hundreds of years with the public tortures of individuals. Anybody that didn't capitulate. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Anybody that didn't capitulate to control, didn't submit to their authority, they didn't just kill, they tortured. And and I'm going to tell you that if the entire world is now modeled in that village, 1 hour's drive north of where the girls were kidnapped, where they stayed for 3 days. The whole world is paralyzed. And if there aren't people who are willing to risk their lives to stop evil, evil ultimately will triumph.
There's absolutely no doubt about this. I mean, this is exactly how evil triumphed in Iraq. When Saddam Hussein took over, the first thing he did, literally the first thing he did, he exterminated thousands of people that he believed might go against him. He literally had them murdered.
Yeah. Well, so did Alexander the Great. I just finished a story on him. So did almost every Roman empire, our emperor, throughout the empire. They all have done the same thing. It's the history of man is that with human institutions, and religions are all human institutions, any potential threat is exterminated. And by exterminating the threat, exterminating those who are likely to stand up, then you cower the whole. That's part of what the NSA is trying to do in terms of the American NSA, of moderating and monitoring people who stand up above the crowd. Because if they can eliminate them, the rest of the people are extraordinarily easy to manipulate.
But what's happening also, there are more people waking up, even in Europe. The latest results in Europe show that more people are waking up and they don't want Islam and they don't want new immigrants from Islamic countries. It's taking a lot of time. I know it's taking a long time, but they're waking up.
I think that it's true amongst a segment of society. There is that's why I began this program talking about the fact that this is the fastest growing and most important segment of society, those who realize that their governments are failed institutions that have misled them, as are their religions. And so I think there are a very substantial percentage of people, even in the United States here too, that are waking up to the reality of what Islam is and that their governments are working against their interests. Unfortunately, the governments are not waking up. But it is a significant number of people. I want to turn to another story. It's a related story. There's a woman in the Sudan. You've probably followed her. Her name is Miriam Yahya Ibrahim. She was sentenced to death. Right. Now, first of all, there are... The big debate in the news is, you know, whether she is a Muslim or a Christian, but that really ought not be the debate. The debate would be, why would a religion sentence a person to death for choosing one religion over another?
Because that religion is insecure.
Yeah, that's exactly
completely
right.
Completely and utterly useless and insecure. Because if they were proud of their religion, if Islam is such a great religion, and somebody wants to get out of it, let them get out of it. You don't want garbage.
Let me.
But they are garbage, so they will not allow anybody to get out of it.
Correct. Let me reference two, and I'm not going to cite the chapter and verse. You probably know them, but there is a place in the Quran that actually says there shall be no compulsion in religion. There's another place in the fourth surah of the Quran that says if a Muslim rejects their faith, kill them. How do those two statements work together?
Beautifully. Because the first statement was made or so-called revealed to Muhammad when he was in Mecca, when he was a poor little guy without any army, defenseless, and they were continuously. The second verse came in Medina when he became a terrorist.
That's correct. By the way, the when he's saying there's no compulsion in religion, what he is actually saying is, poor me, I don't have any way to defend myself. Everyone is picking on me. They're all saying that I'm a demon-possessed, a lying moron who is making all of this up. You shouldn't have this kind of compulsion in religion. So he is, at that point, he's viewing himself as a victim. And you're right. Then later, the fourth surah is revealed in Medina, yesteryear's Yathrib, and he is now a terrorist. He is extraordinary. He has the largest militia in Arabia. He is the ultimate bad man. And with the ultimate militia, he has now become an intolerant dictator. It's either you capitulate to him or you die. And so the fourth surah actually says, if a Muslim rejects their faith, kill them. So what the Sudanese government is doing with this woman, should it be determined that she was a Muslim by Islamic standards, they're actually fulfilling the Quran, aren't they?
Of course, 100%. But she said that she was brought up as a Christian because her mother was Christian.
Yes, but in Islam, isn't the definition of who's a Muslim?
It belongs to the father.
There you go. Because how many rights does a mother have in Islam, a woman?
Realistically, no rights whatsoever.
That's correct. So the moment the mother's faith is absolutely irrelevant in Islam as it relates to the children, because the children belong to the father. So if the father determines whether a person is a Muslim or not a Muslim. But that's the case. So it's the issue is, according to Islamic law, she was born to a Muslim father, even though the father bailed out and left her and the mother to raise her daughter alone. And the mother was a Christian because her father was a Muslim. She's a Muslim by Islamic standards.
Correct. But the issue shouldn't be whether she was a Muslim or a Christian or whatever it is. The issue in the world should be, this is Islam.
Right.
This is corruption. This is what it is. It's evil. End of conversation.
Yes. Killing somebody because they, even though she actually did not change her faith, but killing somebody who chooses to no longer be a Muslim, which is exactly what the Quran orders people to do, is not conducive to a civilized world. It should not be allowed.
Definitely.
Can you imagine if Islam was not thought of as a religion? Say if Islam was thought of as a political code. And there was a country out there that says, if you want to leave this country, we will kill you. What would the world think of that country?
Oh, as a corrupt country, as an evil country.
Right.
But the world today is evil. The world is evil.
Right. So here we have a religion.
They don't look at them as evil.
So here we have a religion that says, if you leave our religion, we will kill you.
Yep.
And yet you have the President of the United States praising that religion as a great religion, when he knows that the fourth surah of the Quran says if a Muslim rejects their faith, kill them.
By the way, regarding no compulsion, you have not cleared.
Yes.
True. The Quran says there is no compulsion in religion.
Mm-hmm.
But the Quran also says those who do not believe in Islam should be dealt with humiliation and degradation, and they have to pay the jizya.
There you go. that sort of defines
itself.
So
without compulsion, it's forcing them nonetheless to turn to Islam.
Right, because he really had no preference. If you became a Muslim and therefore a jihadist that would go off and rob and rape and plunder other people, you were of value to him, And if you didn't want to become a Muslim and you just became a source of plunder to be used and subjugated, well, that was fine, too. That's why there's no compulsion.
That's exactly why there was no compulsion. There is no reason for compulsion.
Right. Yeah, so long as
you... Because other venues to force you to turn.
Right. Yeah, so long as you, in an abject humility, surrender to Islam's authority and you forfeit your freedom, your dignity, and your money, you are not forced to convert.
Convert. Thank you. And the conversation
again.
It's really simple, honestly, Yada. You and I... We're not very geniuses. We're not geniuses. We just studied the subject.
Correct.
Anybody can study the same subject.
Correct.
And anybody spends 1 hour on Quran, literally
right.
1 hour,
right.
reading any surah of the Quran.
Correct.
It's enough. It really should
right.
be enough.
Right. I mean, if you read the initial surahs that were revealed in Mecca, you're not going to find a call to arms. You're not going to find a terrorist manifesto. What you're going to find is an insulting, childish argument that is way beneath the dignity of even a civilized human being, much less God. And you're going to find repulsive morality. And you go from there to nothing but kill, slash, murder, and terrorize. Welcome back to Shattering Mess. We're having a conversation with IQ Al Rasuli. IQ, I want to direct your attention to another related story. In Pakistan yesterday, a young woman was stoned to death while her husband, I believe it was her husband, pleaded for her life. She and no one came to her rescue. She was actually stoned to death by her own family. And I haven't studied that particular story, but I understand that she was sold as property to one man, but she instead wanted to marry a different individual. So she was stoned to death by her own family because she was viewed by her own mother and father as property.
Well, this is Islam. Why are we shocked? You and I are never shocked.
No.
There is nothing Muslims can do that shock me. It's impossible. It is so beneath contempt, this belief system.
Yes.
It is impossible to insult. Many times I was confronted by somebody saying, you are insulting our religion. I can't insult your religion.
I can't, yes.
First of all, you don't have a religion. And if it was a religion, it is so far beneath contempt, I cannot possibly insult it.
Yeah. How do you consult a religion that was founded by a person who was a rapist, a pedophile, who was incestuous, who was a slave trader, a kidnapper, and claimed to become victorious by having led 75 terrorist raids during the first 10 years of his existence in that religion? I don't know if there are words that you could say that are more incriminating than simply the truth.
The truth is the incriminating one. Absolutely. That's exactly what it is. This is why they want to shut us up. This is why they want to criminalize anybody who reveals the truth about Islam.
But
they want to do it in the United Nations. They want to do it in Western Europe. They want to do it in America.
Right. Because the truth is so lethal to this religion. And this religion is so successful at terrorizing people into submission. And so the world powers love the idea that you've got a religion that is extraordinarily effective at cowering people so that they will submit. And they don't want the truth known about it. Now, the three stories. You've got almost 300 little girls that are being murdered, tortured, and raped by fundamentalist Muslims. You've got a fundamentalist Muslim court that wants to kill a woman because she wants to be a Christian. And then you have a community in Pakistan where a family stoned their own daughter to death because she wouldn't go along with being sold as property. Somewhere along the way, where is the character of men in this world who aren't, if we all lost it so that no one is willing to stand up for these poor battered women?
No, I'll tell you why. If those women were fundamentalist Muslims wearing the hijab, yes, they would stand. If they were Palestinian, they would mention it. But since they are Christians or Jews or Hindus or Buddhists, you will never hear a word.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that's a problem here is that most Muslim women really aren't victims. They are the most ruthless, vicious promoters of the religion. And so it is difficult. I mean, it really is difficult to help Muslim women because they are so viciously devoted to promoting their religion. So in terms of this poor woman that's in jail who's a Christian, you know, my heart bleeds for her. And for those 300 kids, man, my gut is wrenched for those 300 little girls that are being tortured and raped by Boko Haram. But, you know, a Muslim woman who chooses to marry someone other than she was sold to, that's harder to feel an emotional attachment to because you can't help her. You'll never get the Islam out of her.
We can't. They are terrorized into it. They suffer from the Stockholm Syndrome.
Yes, they do.
All 750 million of them suffer of exactly the same characteristic of the Stockholm Syndrome. They have been terrorized to such an extent, they honestly believe that the only way they can survive is with their husbands.
Is it possible that a good Muslim man, a Muslim man that's following Muhammad's example, can love his wife? Or does he look at his wife as a piece of property?
Only a piece of property. Islam does not have love. You read the Quran, you read the Hadith.
Yes.
You studied them.
Yes.
Can you find the word love anywhere in the Quran?
No.
I haven't found it.
Oh, no.
That answers the question.
Yeah. It's why in the reward for jihadists as they kill Christians and Jews is multiple virgins who remain virgins. It's all about conquest. It's about abuse. It's about control. It's not about love. Most certainly not about marriage. Thank you, IQ. I always appreciate your integrity and character.